Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Scott Cluthie's Positively Incorrect, live on Blog Talk Radio. The call-in line is 347-308-8478. And now Scott Cluthie and Positively Incorrect.
Hello and welcome live on this Thursday evening across America, around the world. Time for another live edition of Positively Incorrect. Later in the program, I'll be playing a great interview with J.D. Messenger, who worked with CNN. He's a very gifted journalist, but he's written also a tremendous book, 11 Days in May. Right now, though, we are live, and I don't really know Peter Shapiro. Yes, I guess we're up in the Boston area this evening. Is that right?
Yes, Lexington, Massachusetts, where the revolution started.
Well, I was born in Chicopee Falls, Massachusetts,
really?
So I don't know how far around the corner that is, but I know from whence you speak.
Well, in Massachusetts, it takes a long time to get from basically anywhere, so I don't think it's that far in miles, but it takes a long time to drive there.
That's right, over the river and through the woods, as they say.
Right.
Peter David Shapiro is now, he's working on his third book, and actually we're going to talk about his second book, which is actually the one that he completed first. Well, we won't go into all that. But it's a great book, and for my friends who love the spiritual themes, who are interested in the paranormal, in contact with the other side, Peter David Shapiro has written a really easy-to-read, but also very thoughtful and insightful, very interesting twist in the book, Ghosts on the Red Line, a novel. And, Peter, I thought it was kind of funny, because we were talking before the show, you really haven't had a lot of experience with intuitives or psychics or even ghosts or what have you, but these thematics are fully funded in the book. I mean, the book is literally about ghosts on the red line, which, tell our dear listeners what the red line is for those who do not know.
The red line is one of the major subway lines in the Boston area. It runs from the far distant western edge of the city of Cambridge, and then cuts through Cambridge down through Boston, and then south of Boston to another town called Braintree. So it kind of intersects Boston, going from west down to the southeast, I guess. There are a number of other lines that have different colors, but the red line is the one I know the best. I've ridden it the most, and it's a very important line in the city. It carries about 240,000 passengers a day during weekdays.
Now, the premise is the book is that people start to see their loved ones, sometimes not so much loved ones, even pets, while riding on the red line in particular, and in a particular part of the red line. But it's all revealed in the book in a very nice way. It doesn't end up there with the visitations, which is a really great thing, but we're not going to talk about that, because you want to get the book and read it and find out the sort of the resolution, you might say, of what to do about it, because these ghosts cause a lot of problems for a lot of people, don't they, Peter?
Yeah, that's really how the story came to me. I was taking my morning walk, which I've done ever since we had a dog who we had her for 14 and a half years, and after she was gone, I just kept taking the walk, and it was during one of those walks that the title popped into my mind, Ghosts on the Red Line, and it just, I don't know where it came from, but once it was there, the thought was, well, what would people do if they started to see their loved ones, or, as you say, people they didn't love so much, if they started encountering them on the red line, what would they do, and what would the MBTA, which runs the transit system, do? So that's where the story started. I almost was starting to write it during my morning walk.
Well, there you go for all you authors in waiting out there. Where an idea can come from, let the intuition guide you. In this case, the act of walking and the repetition of walking and this pattern of where you'd walk your dog even after it left you, and this idea sort of fell into your mind, and you pursued it and worked it. As I was mentioning, you've written a couple of books now, including read my own notes are very helpful. The Trail of Money, which you actually started previous to Ghosts of the Red Line, but published afterwards. Is that right?
Right. I didn't know. I was a consultant for many years. I always wanted to write novels, but I sort of put that dream aside early on to make a living, and I made a living as a management consultant. And it was so for many years I did that, but I always had this notion of writing a book. And at some point, around 8 or 9 years, 7 or 8 years ago, I thought I'm just going to do it. I'm going to start. And it was a total secret. I didn't tell anyone, including my wife or anybody, I was doing it because I didn't know if I could finish it. And so I wrote it for a number of years and got to a point where it was a completed story. It wasn't good. It wasn't really up to a good standard, but it was complete. And when I found out I could actually complete a book, that was the major revelation. But I showed it, or I sent it to query letters to a number of agents about it, and I concluded, they concluded for me, and I also concluded it wasn't ready. And that's where I had the inspiration. That's when I got the inspiration for Ghosts on the Red Line. I finished that one quite quickly, 12 to 18 months. And that was, I got that out pretty quickly. And then I went back to the first book and rewrote it almost totally, and that became The Trail of Money, which is a different story, but it has the same protagonist, different kind of story, but the same protagonist, who is, it happens, a consultant named Harry West.
Harry West is also a management consultant in the book.
Right, right.
And I guess he's a little alienated from his ex-wife, Alexandra.
Yes. Well, they had a... That's the story that really gets the Ghost in the Red Line going is that he was very close to his ex-wife, but they had a baby girl named Ariel, and she was killed by a drunk driver, and that really messed Alexandra up, messed him up too. But she was so depressed that they split up because of that, and so they were split up. She was a very accomplished entrepreneur in the Boston area. She started an important company, and she was well-known, very respected, and I think Harry respected her, but they became distant from each other. They really only met once a year during the parole hearings for the drunk driver who had killed their child, and they cooperated together to try to make sure that he stayed in jail for the full length of his sentence.
Now, given, and by the way, dear listeners, if you have any questions or comments for my guest Peter Shapiro, feel free to call in. The call-in line is 347-308-8478. That's 347-308-8478. Tonight live on Positively Incorrect with your host, Scott Cluthie, the book Ghosts on the Red Line, a novel. And the website is ghostsontheredline.com. Is that the right one, Peter?
Yes, that'll work. Yep.
Very good. You know, and of course, with any book, even fiction, whatever it is, typically, unless you've created an entire universe that is all unique, J.R.R. Tolkien,
right.
You want to do some due diligence, some research, depending on how much accuracy you want in your story. Now, this story involves passengers on subways being visited by spirits of the departed in one form or another. What kind of research, because, Peter, we talked, you didn't have a real strong inclination towards psychics or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I was just interested sort of in some of the due diligence or the research you did as far as how you want to frame that, and especially in regard to, when people get the book and read about the circumstances and understand why they particularly showed up on the Red Line, on that subway, and why, where they were. What kind of research did you do on that? Just interested.
I didn't do much research on the nature of visitations. Like anybody, I've seen lots of movies about visitations and ghosts, and I've read lots of books about it, but I didn't really get into that side. I did a fair amount of work trying to figure out what might be an explanation for these visitations. And because I think one of the key things is that although the people who experience them believe that they're real, Harry West himself is not sure. It's really not sure. He's really not sure whether it's something which is an hallucination on the part of the people on the Red Line, and then later in the visitation room. These are hallucinations, or these really are visitations by spirits from the other side. He doesn't know, and it's sort of left up to the reader, to a large extent, to decide what the reader he or she thinks is happening, because it could go either way.
Now you're a management consultant, and in the book, Harry West is also a management consultant. But it's kind of interesting because I guess Harry's firm is given an assignment, as it were, to research this and try and find out what's going on, and then they bring in other parties. Is that something a management consultant group might be asked to do, to manage the situation?
Yes, I guess I'd say yes and no. I mean, I was a consultant. I have been a management consultant for probably 35 years, and I've never been asked to evaluate visitations by ghosts. So, and to that extent, it doesn't happen. At least it hasn't happened to me. But the nature of the request, given the situation on the Red Line, is I think pretty realistic. I mean, Harry's firm has already worked for the MBTA, which operates the Boston Public Transit System, and so it's not unusual, not unexpected that the client would call on him and say, "Can you help us figure out what's going on?" And how he does it with his team of junior consultants is also, I think, what a consultant would do. At least what my kind of consultant would do.
Right. Right. And, that's sort of the modus operandi of the methodology you'd use, huh?
Right. And basically, he starts, as you know, from he has a team of consultants, and the first thing to figure out is what's happening on these trains. So he gets his young consultants, and he says to them, split up the trains. I want you to ride back and forth on the Red Line. And when you see someone having this kind of experience, ask them what happened. And that's what they do, and that's how they start to track down where the visitations are coming from, or why they're happening.
One interesting aspect about these ghosts is that only the person involved sees them. Now, classically, we see that someone, if a ghost appears, then everyone sees, oh my God, But sort of like, how do you see that? Do you see that? That's a much more personal thing. They're sitting on a subway train with all these people. And they're the only one that sees the spirit.
Right.
So there's a real personal connection bonding there.
Right. And everybody else is wondering what's happening to this person
right.
who is suddenly crying or laughing or upset, angry. Initially, of course, they think they're just crazy. And there are people, of course, on the Red Line, like on any major city subway system, who are disturbed. But it becomes apparent when there's so many reports of these occurrences on the Red Line. There's more than that. It's just normal people who are having these experiences, and so that's how that.
And because they keep reoccurring, now it's like 2-3 weeks. It's happening all the time. Of course, then what happens? Well, we know what happens. The media shows up, of course.
Right. And yes.
Starts
and,
the internet. And then it gets to be a problem with a capital P, right?
Yeah, major problem. Well. The MBTA knew, was aware from the beginning, we've got to deal with this. But as they expected, once the word got out, and at first, with the social media, people were tweeting about it, I saw this strange thing, and then it broke through to the newspapers, and then the TV station set up with their cameras at the Red Line, major Red Line stations, interviewing people. So,
right,
and
so now it's become a major headache and a political problem and a news
right.
problem and a financial problem and a lot of
right.
all kinds
right.
of problems. Then you also have, you live in Boston. I mean, I guess you could say it's one of the more Catholic cities in the country.
Right. Yes.
And also, of course, Boston's one of the oldest cities in the country and has some of the oldest places in the country. And has some of the oldest ghost stories in the country, I'm sure. How now that you've stuck your head in this pot, is this like? Are you sort of becoming more aware of the haunting of Boston, or that kind of thing? Are you noticing? Are you becoming curious about this? Are you finding places where that are known, you know, that kind of thing?
I haven't gone down that road. I did pay attention to some of the people who look at those things. So I was trying to let them know about the book. But apart from that, I mean, there are ghost tours in Boston. There
I'm
are folks
sure.
who do them, you know, there because, as you say, there are a number of places around the city about which there are stories. And so these tours go to these places and do what they do. But I haven't pursued that line. I've been busy trying to write my third book now. So
I don't have time for that. I'm writing a book. Have you ever had any kind of what you'd call a psychic or spiritual experience yourself, or, you know, this dream? I've had, I don't know why, but this week I've had some very, very real dreams. I was sure I was dreaming. Of course, I was sure I was awake, but what was going on in the dream was definitely not your everyday. And then, of course, I woke up like, wow, you know, it was very 3D dimensional, very real for me. And that's just me, and that comes and goes at times. But have you ever had those kinds of experiences?
I you know, I can't say that I have. I mean, I'm more like my protagonist, Harry West. I wouldn't say that I was a believer in spiritualism, but I'm interested enough to write about it. But myself, I'd say I'm a skeptic. You know, I must say that it might not be a coincidence that. The thought occurred to me to write the book along the walk that I'd taken for 14 years with our dog.
What was your dog's name?
Penny Lane. And she's a Springer Spaniel.
Penny Lane.
And as you mentioned, there is a chapter in the book about someone who sees a Springer.
Yeah.
On the train, that she'd lost. And so, you know, So there is a connection there between our beloved doggy and where the inspiration occurred for the book. It happened to be along with my phantom dog.
Well, I will plant a seed in your mind now that will really get you itching, because Penny Lane, let me know if Penny Lane comes to visit you. You're
right.
Pretty sure that you don't even think that you're asleep and you're with Penny Lane, and then you realize that you're, let's see how that works out. Because I think Penny Lane, the spirit of Penny Lane, is helping to encourage your creativity. And it's always a great thing, isn't it? It's never too late to reinvent yourself and bring your true creative spirit out. I mean, management consultant is great, but being well-known author has a nice kind of ring to it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a short chapter here with the doggy. I could read that if you'd like. I don't know. It might take too long for the interview, but it's 2 pages.
Well, why not? I mean, hey, and I know a great pet psychic, if you ever want to talk to Penny Lane. She does it all the time, and she also moves elephants in Africa when they're lost back to where they belong. She's very good, Joan Ranquit. She's one of the top in the world. Tell us about Penny Lane. This is a little teaser from Ghosts on the Red Line, a novel from Peter David Shapiro. And we have Mr. Shapiro reading the chapter about the dog himself.
Right, so I've set it up. The name of the person we start with is Maureen Minion. She's one of the junior consultants who's been assigned to ride the Red Line trains and interview people who she sees having experiences. So it starts off, Maureen Minion's first Red Line train of the day departed Alewife at 9:14 a.m. Her train had just left Porter Square Station in Cambridge when Maureen saw a fashionably dressed woman in her late 30s or perhaps a bit older lean down and extend her arms towards the open floor in front of her. "What a beautiful dog," she said. "You look just like my Mirabelle." Then the woman turned towards the man who was sitting beside her. "I love Springer Spaniels," she said. "My Mirabelle was a black and white just like yours." The man nodded. He pulled a smartphone from his belt holster and began to read it intently. "Do you mind if I pet her?" the woman asked. Maintaining his focus on his smartphone, the man did not respond. "Hello, little puppy," the woman cooed, her hands kneading the air in front of her. "You want me to scratch your ears? You like that, don't you? They're so soft, just like my Mirabelle's. Look how she's pressing her head against my hand." When the man ignored the woman's invitation, she returned to the space in front of her knees. "Give me a kiss," she said. "Oh, give us a kiss, honey face. You love me." She leaned forward and, closing her eyes, turned her head sideways as if presenting her cheek. And then, facing forward again, she parted her lips in a kiss. "I love you, too," she exclaimed. "You've got such a cold nose. What a sweetheart." "Yeah, that's my hand you're licking, sweetie. It's not your dinner. Someone should feed this doggy. Look at your little tail go. If you wag and wriggle any harder, you're going to fall over. The woman laughed. That's my baby. Again, she kissed his face before, and she said, you are so beautiful, just like my lovey Mirabelle. You could be her exact twin. Even your collar is the same as hers. What's your name, sweetie? Let me look at your collar. She reached forward, and it seemed she was holding something in her hand. She looked stunned for a moment and then turned back to the man sitting beside her and demanded angrily, is this some kind of stupid joke? Finally, the man reholstered his smartphone and replied to the woman's questions. Lady, trust me, I haven't a clue what you're talking about. I think you need help. This is not your dog? There's no dog here, lady, the man said. The woman looked back at the floor and her face fell. She was here just a moment ago, she said, my Mirabelle, my little sweetie. The train had by now reached Kendall, MIT, and the man rose to leave. You need help, lady, he said. After he was gone and the train was moving again, the woman stayed in her seat, gazing dejectedly at her purse, which she held with both hands on her lap. Maureen sat down beside her and said, ma'am, I couldn't help seeing what happened back there. Could I talk with you about it? I am working on a project for the MBTA concerning the Red Line. Here's my business card. I'd like to ask you a few questions. So
yeah.
That's one of the visitations which is observed by the consultant.
Yeah, there's one in just about every chapter, actually.
Right. That's the first half of the book is visitations which happen on the Red Line, and then of course Harry and his team do work out why these visitations are occurring, and they find a way to, once they give the answer to the MBTA, the MBTA resolves to stop them, obviously, because they're causing such a problem. And that's when the second half of the book comes up, because Alexandra, as you mentioned at the beginning, Harry's former wife, had seen their daughter, who was killed, you know, as a baby. She'd seen her daughter on the train, and she's irate that Harry is helping the MBTA shut this off because she wants to keep seeing her daughter.
Yes, that develops a really great second stage of the story. I don't want to give away the details, but a way for people to be with visitation and not be on the train.
Right.
And actually, you know, Peter, given the decades of work around this kind of thing that I've had the privilege of interviewing people about and understanding about, it's a really great resolution, because it sounds very plausible in the world of especially Stanford,
mm-hmm.
Stanford research. That's like just like something would happen there. But in this case, you're working with MIT.
Right, right. Well, MIT has a major role, as people will find out if they read the book, in what happens. And so they have a stake in the creation of this these visitation rooms. And it's not giving away too much, because it's on the back of the book. The Alexander comes up with this notion, being a very clever entrepreneur, why don't we create visitation rooms, and by replicating the attributes of the Red Line trains, once we figured out, you know, what's causing these visitations, we'll replicate them in a visitation room. And it takes a lot of work, it takes some research, but they figure it out. However, that there's certain folks in the Boston area who aren't pleased by that prospect. And
the Archbishop.
The Archbishop. Theologically, it's contrary to, you know, the teachings of the Church, and so he brings in someone in the House of Representatives of Massachusetts to help to oppose it, and also a gangster who's buried bodies all through Somerville is not too pleased about it.
That's right. That's gangsters in the Church. I can't imagine what kind of strange symbiotic relationship that would be.
Well, they're on the same side on this
one.
Think.
Yeah, let me think about this. The Pope knows. Is that the Bank of Rome? Okay, we'll leave. That's a different book.
Yeah.
You have another great character that does carry over into your new book, and that's Dr. Frances Gore-Mellon. Tell us about Dr. Frances Gore-Mellon.
She is one of the best known psychic mediums in Boston, probably the best known. She has an office down in downtown Boston called the Institute for Paranormal and Psychical Research, and she becomes interested in the Red Line visitations because she's had an experience in her own life, and she wants to have a visitation with the people that she's lost personally, on the Red Line train. So she tries to get herself involved with Harry and his consultants, and he is not too welcoming of her. However, as things evolve, she has ways of figuring out what they're doing, and when they start to build the visitation room, she manages to she becomes important to them, and I don't want to give too much away there, but she's helpful to them in getting the visitation room moving forward. But she's a practicing psychic medium and a very canny, wily type of person.
Yeah. And did you model any of these, besides Harry yourself, any of these people, the main subjects of the book, off people you know, or
I think there's some, you know, you think about people you know, and some of their attributes, personalities end up on your characters. But there's one character here, and a friend of mine who read the book was, you know, reading it, and I think he said he was enjoying it, and then he got to a certain place and he said, "Geez, that's me you're describing." So and there was an aspect of it which I did borrow from his experience, so that was kind of fun. I put that in, kind of figuring if he read the book, he'd get a giggle out of it. But
I don't know if Marriott hotels would ever really allow what I'm doing here to actually happen. That must be the most far-fetched part of the book.
It's pretty far-fetched, yeah. And that there is a real Marriott down at that location, and so I was modeling that after a real hotel. They probably wouldn't, but.
What the heck?
It's fiction. You know, I can write what I want.
Exactly. And I thought the name Life Plus was a very interesting name to conjure up for this particular business enterprise.
For new company. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Harry has a whole new lease on life, I think.
Right.
Perhaps
he's been a consultant.
Got on.
Yep. He's been a consultant for a long time, and this is a chance to do something different, which is to run this Life Plus company with his former wife, Alexandra.
That sounds vaguely familiar. I don't know what to say. it's terrific writing, Peter Shapiro.
Well,
it really
thank
is.
Thank Ghost, you. Thank
yeah,
you.
Ghost on the Red Line, a novel. This is a summer read, is what I would say. This is a beach read. You want to sit at the beach and read a really fun and intriguing book where you wonder what's going to happen next while you're on vacay somewhere or taking your staycation. Staycation, I guess they call it now.
Right, yeah.
It might be. This is a book that you will start to read, and then you will want to find out what happens. Ghosts on the Red Line, a novel. And the website is ghostsontheredline.com from Peter David Shapiro, my live guest this first half of the show this evening. And Peter, you've done a very good job. I think it's a great little book.
Thank you, Scott. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me
and
on.
Thank you for reaching out to be on the show. I appreciate it. Share your creativity and your writing with our listeners this evening.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we look forward to we'll talk to you then when the portrait of Ignatius Jones.
Right. Yeah.
Ignatius
I look forward
Jones.
To you mentioned you've had experiences with psychic mediums, and this is much more. That third book is much more about psychic mediums, and so I may want to get some advice from you.
All right. Well, I can send you to psychic mediums. Believe me, they'll talk to you. And we'll be interested to see what you conjure up, Peter Shapiro.
Yeah.
Anyway, you have a great evening up in Boston, and it's great to talk to you. Sorry, Tuesday night. Peter was supposed to be on Tuesday night, but due to my technical failures, he didn't make it. So it's great to have him on this Thursday night. But a very well-written book, Peter. Much success, and we look forward to talking to you as the third book comes into clear focus for you, okay?
Thanks, Scott. Appreciate it.
All right, you have a great evening. Everybody stay out there. I'll be back with J.D. Messenger in 11 days in May on Positively Incorrect with your host, Scott Clue.